Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Today, we have a really cool episode for you because we are featuring our very first guest for the 2022 season. And I'm really excited about it for many reasons. First of all, because this guest is incredible and does all sorts of really cool things, but also because he is a dear friend of mine. So I'd like to introduce all of you to the one and only Mr. Peter Bryant. Peter is a game designer, a former podcaster. He's a dad, a science nerd, TotalCon industry guest. And most important for today's episode is he's partner and co-owner of Solarian Games. Pete, how are you today?
Hey, thanks for having me on. I'm happy to be here. It's been a long, a couple of years since I've been on your show.
Long time.
Yeah.
Everything's been a long time. It was in pre-pandemic days, the before times.
Yes, it was. I think the last one I was on was your Christmas show where picking out like the gifts for people.
Yeah.
Gift suggestions.
The holiday gift guide episode.
Yeah,
that's it. It's very popular. It's an annual tradition. Although this past year, we didn't do one. You know what? I don't think we did.
It's been kind of unprecedented times.
Yeah, well, I had intended to, and then I couldn't. So I was like, okay, we're just finishing off the year. We'll come forward in the new year ahead and get things going.
Sure.
I don't know about you, but in many ways, all this kind of feels as if I'm living a zombie movie that constantly goes back to how it all started and what happened before, right. And everyone's all, you know, holed up in their bunkers and you can't go outside at night because you hear the sounds of the zombies clawing at your doors or whatever. And you think, oh, in the before times, we could go to the supermarket and we could hang out and do it. I don't know, just, it's funny. It's not funny.
But remember when we'd go to conventions and breathe each other's air?
How dare you not wear a mask and be within 6 feet of someone else back when you thought it was safe.
Back before when somebody coughed, you know, everybody in the room didn't jump.
Quick, get out of here. Run.
It's the Rona.
The infected are here.
Right. Yeah.
Again, a zombie movie.
Although I'll tell you what, man, I've been watching the numbers and it looks like they're in free fall again. So that's a good thing.
I hope so. Yeah.
I think the curve is like, it's like diving. It's good. It's a good thing.
I dream of a day where we get back to, I don't think we'll ever go back to what we were before, but to some better version than what we have now.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. And it's a little off course of your show, but I remember, I'm going to be 52 tomorrow. I remember, you know, when we talk about before time, you want to go back to the before time, back before 9/11, right? And I absolutely see a different society before and after. There's before 9/11 and there's after 9/11. It's interesting. It's very interesting. I mean, I could do like an entire week of episode talking about, you know, those differences and where I see that in society, but there definitely is a thing. And I think COVID is going to be the same way. I think that, you know, society was one way and from here on out, it's going to be another way.
I think you're right. I know in the workplace, kind of seeing that as a society that individuals don't want to go into the office, right. They're giving up the 9-to-5 because they want more freedom. They realize you don't live forever and they want to do things that bring them happiness. What a shocking idea.
You know what? That is it's a long time coming. You know, when the internet was, you know, had come about and there was enough bandwidth and enough people had it, we should have already been moving in that direction. People who didn't have to go in the office shouldn't have had to go in the office. This just kind of pushed it. And I hope it's one of the sayings I have it's not really meant as dark humor, but it's kind of a little bit dark humor, is never let a tragedy go to waste.
Mm-hmm.
You know, always try. And the idea behind my saying on that is that if something tragic happens and you can get something good out of it, do not waste it, because you know, you're going to get all the bad stuff that comes from the tragedy. You can't help that, right? But if there's anything good that comes along with it, you need to grab onto that and hang on to it, because the only other way you'll ever get it again is with another tragedy. We want to avoid this as much as possible.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I really do believe there's a silver lining in most things in life, mm-hmm. and usually a lesson to be learned. And yep. I think we're learning all sorts of lessons out of this awfulness.
And yeah, I think so.
Good to take those lessons and take them to heart and see what we can do from it. And hopefully yeah, it's good.
On my day job, I work for the government, and we've been instructed to maximize telework. So if you do not have to go into the office, you are told to stay home. You are ordered to stay home.
That's awesome.
But you need to be there. And they're saying that is as of right now, it's looking like they're not going to go back. Like, even when all this clears up, it's going to be same thing. If you can work from home, work from home.
It makes sense for a lot of businesses too, because they don't need to have as much office space. They can save some money, mm-hmm. and people can work from wherever. So it widens their applicant pool for positions. If you don't need to have everyone in one location, right. and just kind of do all that. It makes sense, I think, for everyone.
Saves on lighting and heating and just all those other infrastructure type deals. Cleaning, you don't have to pay, you know, people to come in and clean up after folks if there's nobody in the office, or,
yep.
you know, and less trash, less, I mean, it's just, you don't have to supply, think about it, you don't have to supply toilet paper to the office because nobody's using it. So that, you know, it has its benefits. I mean, I do miss being in the office. I'm a people person. I do like being around people.
You are a people person.
Yeah, I am. And, I do like seeing people. And I do think there is a value in, one of the things about workplace, and it's sort of like what came about with coffee shops and tea rooms back in the, I don't know, whatever, the 1600s or whatever. They think that was part of the Enlightenment, was that these gathering places is where people exchanged ideas. And we do that at work a lot. You know, you'll be like, I'm going to take a walk. And you'll walk around, talk to other people, and you will get ideas from other people, like especially stuff you've been banging your head against. Like, hey, man, what have you been up to? Oh, I'm working on this project and blah, 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 blah. But I run into this problem with this thing and I can't get it to work. And they'll be like, well, have you tried XYZ or whatever? And you're like, oh my God, yeah, I think that would do it, right? There's a lot of that happens. Or they'll say something and it may not be the answer, but you go back, you know, you go back to your desk or even right at that moment, you go, you know what, that's not the answer, but you just made me think of this other answer, and that's the answer. And, you know, I'm in engineering, so, you know, when I walk around my building, there's the mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, programmers, and I mean, all kinds of like machine shop guys and mechanics and people who work in 3D printing. So I can walk around and it's, you know, talk with some people and get some answers and get different perspective on things that I never have considered. So I do like that aspect and I do miss that, but you know, yeah, it's not much I can do about it right now. Right.
No, that's true. I find, what you're describing also happens when you get a bunch of, well, I would assume it doesn't matter if, as long as anyone has a shared interest, but with game designers, get a bunch of game sure. designers together and they start talking mechanics and what they like, what they don't and what they use, and then all these new ideas start percolating from that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That's one of the reasons why the convention so much, you know, I'll be talking with another game designer, and you can also pick their brain, like, hey, how do you promote your product, or how did you like, dude, I've seen your stuff everywhere. How did you, you know, did you just brute force that? Did you just email a bunch of people, you know, or, you know, they might say, no, there's a service. It's only like $6 a month. And you're like, what? You know, so you run into stuff like that, and that's very helpful. Or you might say, hey, I've been thinking about doing a Google ad for this or Facebook ad or whatever. And they might say, no, don't do that. Zero return. I've run so many things and just wasted money. And they might say, don't do that. And I'm not saying that. I'm just making this up. So if anybody's listening to this show, I'm not saying that that's not a good thing, because I don't know. But that might be something somebody might say.
When I introduced you, as being a partner and co-owner of something called Solarian. Mm-hmm. And longtime listeners who have heard you come on the show before will recall that when I've introduced you in the past, I introduced you as being involved with the TSR Games. Right. So let's pretend you and I are in an elevator going to the 42nd floor. What happened with that, and why are you with Solarian and not TSR?
We got to get more floors than that. No, I
picked the number for a reason.
Yeah, I don't want to cut it too short because there's been a lot of stuff up in the air about this.
Do whatever length it takes. But
so the short answer is that Jason had the trademark for TSR. He didn't realize he had to re-up it. And you got to remember, we're a small company. And at the time with TSR, Jason was pretty much the prime, and the rest of us were just kind of like, we had our roles. We weren't, you know, we didn't help out with everything. So he let the trademark lapse. Now, trademark is very complicated. It's not as simple as you let it lapse and then someone can grab it and then it's theirs. It's not that simple. You know, the short answer is yes, that can happen, but there's all kinds of ways to, like, you know, because if you're using the trademark, if you're still using it, you get something, it's something blah 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 in perpetuity or some crap like that. We could have contested it. We probably would have won. But at any rate, some other folks, the TSR hobby shop or Lanasa, whoever all those were, they picked it up. We had actually been talking about rebranding for a while anyway, so we just weren't ready to do it just yet. We had already been talking about, like, coming up with our own brand, because we felt that it was becoming disingenuous to be TSR. So back, roll it all the way back to the beginning of TSR 2.0, which is kind of what we are or were. When Jason started that, I wasn't any part of it, but all the old D&D folks were. So you had Luke Gygax was part of it. I think Gary Jr. I think he was part of it. I know Frank was part of it. Tim was part of it. So these are all old TSR original, you know, OGs that were part of this thing. And their main product, the first product they released, was Gygax magazine. So there was a whole lot of TSR, like, goodness in there, at least the original TSR and the thinking of TSR. And they never said that they were replacing TSR or that they were the old TSR. It was always sort of like, this is in the style or the feel of the old TSR. We're honoring it. But as time goes on, I started, like, becoming part of the crew. And then they kind of peeled off one at a time. Luke went off to do, you know, who's getting more involved with Gary Conn. He didn't really have time to work with us on anything. Ernie, he went off to do some, I don't know what happened with him, but he stopped working with us. Merle is the only one that kind of stuck around. Tim and Frank went off to do Eldritch Entertainment. Then Frank had some issues, and then so Tim was kind of on his own. So anyway, so all these people went away, and it was basically me, James, and Jason were the only ones kind of left working on it. So there wasn't really any old TSR crew left. There wasn't any Gygax crew left. There wasn't any of that. So we talked about it. We're like, you know, it's kind of confusing. Like, I mean, like, why are we TSR, right? So then this whole TSR, we'll call TSR 3, came out with a Dungeon Hobby Shop. And it kind of blindsided us. But we were like, well, let's see how this plays out. And we were happy to work with them at first, because we didn't know what they were like. And we're just kind of like, well, you know, whatever, you got the logo and stuff, and, you know, maybe it might just be easier. We don't really want to legally fight it. We know we're going to rebrand eventually. So we'll license our own name back from you for, like, it was like for a pittance for, like, I don't know, like a dollar or something like that. And then, like, the next day, the infamous interview came out, and we're like, all right, that's it. We got to pull the plug. We can't be associated with this whole thing. We wanted to move away from it anyway. I was like, we didn't really want to do it right this minute, but we got to pull the cord, you know, it's pop smoke, get out. So we distanced ourselves from that whole thing, because we were like, you know what? It's not even worth the fight. We don't care. So we rebranded. We had Solarian kind of on deck. So I jumped online, whipped out a website real quick. Jason got the logo and the URL, and you know, and all the other back channel stuff, like the moving the store and changing. Oh man, it was crazy. It was like 3 days of just like hectic, like making, you know, changes to the background and all that kind of stuff. And then changing the Facebook page and the Twitter page and just all that stuff, just complete rebrand. And within a week we had it, we were completely rebranded within a week. And it also helped that we had a bunch of products on deck, and they're starting to come out in the store now. So you're starting to see some new products from us with the Solarian name on it. So that's kind of what happened. It's kind of what it was.
At the same time, I know that you and I had some discussions, and again, new time listeners, go back to the archive, any episode from, I don't know, 20 episodes ago or so, or older, right. But long time listeners will notice that there's something different in the introduction that I did mm-hmm. for our episode today, as opposed to in the past. In the past, I would have our introduction, do the whole spiel, but then there was this whole thing about being a member of a podcast network.
Right.
And it was the TSR podcast network. Mm-hmm. And so at the same time as all the, I'm going to call it craziness, you don't have to use that word, of everything that was going on, mm-hmm. and some would call it a dumpster fire, I'm not going to editorialize, of all the things that was going on with the TSR name and all that sort of stuff, you and I had talked about the podcast network going away. So just for those who may not understand what such a thing is and may wonder why one would exist and what a podcast network does and what the TSR podcast network was, would you be willing to explain just that briefly for listeners?
Yeah, sure. I'll keep this one shorter. So the TSR podcast network, that's where I actually started with Jason. Jason had come on my show, The Myth Wits. And he really liked what I did. He liked the production value, and he liked all the like attention to detail that I put into it. And he was like, you know, I've been wanting to do several podcast shows for TSR, you know, to drive people to the shop, you know, buy product, and you know, just get to know who we are. And so he asked me to head up a podcast network, and I was like, yeah, sure. You know what? That'd be great, because it'll help me, right? Because here's why would you do that? Why would you have a podcast network? And the reason is if you have multiple shows and they're all supporting each other, water raises all boats. You know, rising tide raises all boats. So all the shows benefit from cross promotion, and you know, because podcasts, there's a lot of podcasts, there's a lot of noise. It's very hard to get through the noise. So it's very hard to get any kind of exposure and get people watching or listening or whatever it is you do with your show. So it's just better if you have multiple shows and, you know, people can say, hey, you know, you're listening to Cube of Death podcast, you know, make sure you check out, you know, Wargaming Recon. Or I'd come on Wargaming Recon and you'd say, hey, this is, you know, Pete Bryan. He has our show on our network, you know, Cube of Death. So it started with, Mythwits became part of it immediately. We introduced Cube of Death, Game School. There was Dead Game Society. Was Chad. He joined in. And then I recruited you to join in because you were with Troll in the Corner, but you were the only pot. You were like the last man standing there, right? The last podcast standing there. And I talked to Ben about that. I was like, hey, do you mind if I poach Jonathan before I ask him? And he was like, yeah, it's no problem. He's like, we don't really have a network anymore anyway. So then there was that. But, you know, like I said, when this whole thing blew up and we rebranded over to Solarian, we had to make some difficult choices. One of which was we actually killed that business. So us as a business with TSR is dead. Like, it was cut loose. It wasn't just transferred over and we went from that to being Solarian. We cut the cord and became Solarian, and everything that was TSR is now, it's still, that's all in the past, and we're moving forward as Solarian. One of the things we did do though was Solarian bought stock of all the material and all the components and stuff that were in TSR's library. So it was all legally transferred over from one company to another. But when we did that, We had to decide what we were going to do, because TSR had too much stuff. There was Multiverse World, which was a blog, which that was a whole crew of people to run that. There was the podcast network. There was the games. There was, can't remember if there was anything else that we had going on. And we said, you know what? There's not enough of us to go around. We've tried to do too many things and we haven't done any of them. We haven't really done any of them very well, you know, because we spread too thin. So we're just like, we're going to make games. That's what we're going to do. We're going to concentrate on making games. And once we get that nailed down and we get some games out the door and we get people, we can start adding other stuff. But as we start to add other stuff, we'll add people with that stuff so that stuff is run properly. So if we were to add a podcast network, we'd add somebody to run the podcast network, and that's what they would do. We'd only have, you know, we'd have one manager per podcast. It wouldn't be this thing where one person's trying to run multiple podcasts, because as you know, you run a podcast, that is one person can run it, and that's barely enough. One person running multiple podcasts is just insanity. I did it for like 3 years and it burned me out.
Me too.
I mean, it literally burned me up. I don't even podcast anymore because of it. It was just too much.
That's understandable. It's for anyone who's never done it. You might think, oh, you're just sitting there, you're talking. And that's what I thought in the beginning too. Then I started doing it. It is, I mean, you do that, but that is tiniest thing, maybe second tiniest thing you do.
Oh my god, that's the record. This is the easy part. What we're doing right now, this is nothing. This is the fun part. This is so easy right here.
Being what do they call it in the industry? On air talent. Yeah. that's the thing you aim for.
Oh yeah. When you run your own show, you're on air talent. You're the engineer. You're the editor. You're the scheduler. You're the marketer. You're the accountant, you're the, it's just like, god damn it.
It took me so many years to finally both be at a spot where it was possible, but also where I felt comfortable feeling that I didn't have to do it all and that I could have other people help out and do stuff. So one of the best things I ever did was get my audio editor to go and do stuff. And because editing is, it's awful. It takes over your life. And so he does all my editing. He's amazing. And he gets all that going on. And then in time, I realized there was like, you know, each thing that just was either too much or I realized I didn't enjoy doing. I was like, okay, maybe someone else likes this and can do it. So writing actual show notes was something I was like, oh, this is for me. So there's an amazing guy up in New Hampshire who does my show notes for me, and he gets the outlines for me, and he just types it all up, does his thing. He puts the links in, all, and it's just by itself, they can be, editing's not a small thing, but all the other stuff can be small things. But when you add them up, oh, and then eventually you kill the camel.
And we, I mean, you know, Mythwitch, you remember that? That was just insane because it was a live video show. So we would do a live show every Monday night, and it was every week, and it was 40 weeks out of the year. So we did 40 episodes a year, every week, every Monday night. And it was live, it was video. We had guests on almost every single week. And you know, there was artwork that went with every episode pretty much, you know, like showing stuff off. Like, you know, we may not be doing the artwork, but the person sends it to us and then I got to get it formatted in the right format. And then we'd have to do show notes because we'd research our guests so that we weren't just standing there going, oh, you like stuff. You know, it was, I actually got a lot of comments from people like, damn, you did your research. It's like, yep, we come prepared. You know, and then the one thing we didn't have to do when we went to video like that, and it's the only saving grace, is we didn't have to edit anything because I did everything live. Everything was, it was live edit, what they call live editing. But now mind you, that takes a lot of prep work. So it's like, I'm not editing in the end, but I'm doing all this prep work, you know, setting up all the scenes and like getting any kind of music we're going to have ready and any kind of graphics and, you know, God damn it. I'm getting stressed out just thinking about all the work that used to be. I had one guest on the show cause we went after some high profile guests. You know, we had scientists on and all kinds of stuff.
You had some astronauts or at least one. Yeah.
I had an astronaut on. I had a guy that, worked at NASA, helped bring the astronauts home. He's the one that introduced us to the astronaut, but he also introduced me to the guy who made the first spacesuits, you know, the Apollo spacesuits.
And, oh.
Was still working for that spacesuit company. Matter of fact, he had just retired when I interviewed him. But that interview actually took a year to get because he was so busy. Because, you know, he was wrapping up his whole career in that mm-hmm. last year. So it's very hard, you know, to get him on. We had to dance around with schedules, but I had like Bob Camp. I had the guys who did, you remember the movie Big Hero 6?
Yes.
Okay. We had the two creators of Big Hero 6 for the comic come on. Mm-hmm. But you know, both of them had worked for Marvel and DC. So we had those guys on. We had somebody from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We had, couple comic book artists, guy Ben Bishop, who now is doing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like the official comic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, tons of people, tons of stuff. That all took time. You know, that all took a lot of like reaching out, and I can't. There's hundreds of people who never got back to me or never came on. You know, because I just never knew. You know, you just reach out to people, and sometimes they get back with you, sometimes they don't. Sometimes it takes a while. So they'll get back with you and they'll say, how about next month sometime, blah, blah, blah. And you start arranging it. And then, you know, a couple of weeks later, their promoter or whatever comes on and says, oh yeah, they can't make it. Something came up, blah, blah, blah. Can we schedule for a couple weeks down the road? And I look at my calendar and I'm like, no, I got somebody in that spot. Well, they're not going to be available for 2 more months after that. And I'm like, all right, that's fine. How about then? Blah, blah. I mean, like, seriously, it was like that all the time. And I could be juggling 10 guests during the week, trying to like figure out which week this person was going to be on or that person. And then this is also back before, you know, like we're recording on StreamYard right now, right? Oh my God, I would have killed somebody for StreamYard back then. You know, I was doing everything through like
OBS,
OBS and Google Hang, remember, well, Hangouts on Air.
Yeah. Geez.
And you know, and that freaking thing worked about 75% of the time.
If you were lucky,
right. Then, you know, even before that, we did Justin TV was the first one we were on. And then mm-hmm. we went from Justin TV to YouTube. And then we tried Twitch, and that obliterated our audience. Because that's back during kind of a little early on in Twitch, where there's only like kind of video gamers there. Yeah. Now people watch Twitch for like role-playing stuff. But when we tried it, there wasn't anybody watching role-playing stuff on there. So you had to get an account, and you know, and that was kind of a barrier to entry. And then we came back and we did Facebook Live, and Facebook Live was the best for us. We actually wound up having the best audience with that, just because it announces when you go live. So anybody on Facebook at the time would go, oh yeah, I forgot the show's coming on tonight, and they go watch it.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Yeah. But yeah, oh God, yeah, running a podcast is a beast. So we decided to pair that off. We're like, we're not going to do that right now. Maybe one day.
I think it's a really smart move. And it goes back to something you had mentioned about when something bad happens, don't let it go to waste. And so something bad was happening for you guys. And then it kind of helped to refocus.
Yeah. Yeah. And the beautiful thing is that we still do live stuff every now and then, like we'll run a live game or something for Solarian. Right. And we plan to do more of that in the future. But I don't have to learn anything. I know how to do all this stuff. So it's not like I have to like, oh, I have to figure out how we do this. It's like, no, it's old hat. I got this.
You're good at it.
Yeah, I got it. So, I ran for Christmas. We ran we did Die Hard as a top secret.
Oh, module. Yeah.
So I changed it up a little bit. John McClane couldn't make it. He missed his flight. So it was up to the agents to save the day. It was a good one. It was a good little adventure. We had fun.
Well, let's talk about Solarian.
Okay.
So What is it? I mean, you kind of danced around it a little bit, but what is Solarian? What's the name come from?
Okay. So it doesn't really come from anywhere. It's a word that we made up, although it turns out that Isaac Asimov, because Jason was, he's rereading all of Asimov's books. And I think somewhere in one of the, you know, part of the, not, it's probably not the foundation, but you know, his story is this long story, and foundation is just a part of a bigger story. In one of the books, there's a group or a race or somebody called the Solarians. He's like, you know, that might've been subliminal. He's like, I didn't name it that, you know, he's like, but you know, I've read this book before, so maybe that was in the back of my head, but honestly, what it is, Jason, James, and I are kids of the 70s and 80s, right? And we grew up as sci-fi, big sci-fi fans. And, you know, our biggest impressions were from that time. So we still have a love and an affinity. It's a really warm spot in our heart for all that kind of like 70s and 80s sci-fi, especially like the look and the feel and the, you know, just that whole atmosphere and genre of that time. And a lot of those movies were crap. I get it. That's, you know, whatever. But it's just that whole vision. It's like when you look through books of old sci-fi art in the 70s, I mean, I just love that stuff. Like David Foss, you know, that kind of artwork. Mm-hmm. So Solarian just fit right in there. It sounds like a sci-fi name for something that would have come out of the 70s or 80s or maybe even the 60s, you know. Like there was that movie Solaris, right? It's yep. Solar being like the sun, you know, and Solarians being like, you know, we're children of the sun, something like that. You know, it has that sort of feel to it. And then if you look at our logo on our website, you know, it's got this kind of like brown and orangey earth tone colors to it, which is all those 70s and 80s, early 80s, kind of 70s, more 70s color scheme with, you know, like, and we have, you know, lines going across because they did a lot of that then. So we're just kind of going with that feel. That's sort of our shtick, you know, our branding.
It absolutely comes across that way.
Oh, good. Thank you. Yeah. You know, and we've had people, you know, Jason's a really good designer and I've been told that I'm a good designer too. But we've been told by a bunch of people like, God, yeah, it feels like the seven, it feels like that genre, but modern too at the same time.
Yeah.
To answer your question, what is Solarian? Solarian is it's a role-playing company. So we do role-playing games, tabletop role-playing games. We do also do like, we will do board games. We haven't done any board games yet, but we would. There's no reason why we wouldn't. We do have some card games. We do quite a bit of hybrid type stuff too. And we're very, you know, we're leaning very heavy into the artsy stuff and not the, you know, your standard run of the mill, just role playing stuff. A lot of our projects are very artsy. James he did this book, Anarchy, which was, he did it for the Kickstarter fanzine. I forget what it's called. Zine something.
I'm a backer.
Yeah. Okay. That book is more of an art book. It's an art book with a game in it. So it's there is a game to play, right? But there's a ton of artwork and it's very style. That book itself, you know, this is no dig on James's stuff. I mean, it's a cool little game, right? But there is more style than substance in that book, which is cool. You know, I love the artwork in it. It's a beautiful book. And Jason just did this weird horror game. Which, as legend has it, he found in a trunk in an attic. somebody had made it from the 1920s. And I think they're all sold out, though. I think he sold all those ones that he found.
And what was the title of that one?
It's called Weird Horror.
Oh, okay.
And if you got one of the originals, it had like old keys and letters and postcards, and that's all part of the game, like from like the 20s, right? And they're all real. They're all real, like postcards and real like letters and real what they call ephemera. But it's a very artsy project. We are going to re-release that as he's going to take all the old printed stuff and put it in a book, and then take a modern, he's modernizing that version with modern language and stuff, and smoothing out the rules so that you have a modern version of it. But then all the old printed stuff will be in the book as well. It's just not going to come with all the ephemera and stuff that the original did. It's sort of like a one and done kind of run. It's a collector's item. And then I think, so hold on, let me see. So then Jason's also got, he's got a game coming out soon called Boombox RPG, where you, that was for that fanzine thing, the Zine Quest thing too, but he didn't finish it in time for the Zine Quest, so, but he's still gonna make it because he did most of it. And that's you're like in the late 80s, early 90s, and you're a kid within a style, like, so you're either like in the hip hop scene or punk scene or heavy metal or whatever scene that you're in, and you're trying to create cool points. So you're trying to be cooler than the other people at the table. And like, yeah, part of the game is drawing your character, and you create like a playlist on a cassette tape. You don't really make a cassette tape, but part of making your character is creating your playlist, and then setting up cool stuff like buying cool clothes. And it's a fun little game. It's honestly like one of those things you'd play for like an hour or two, maybe something you do at a convention sitting on the side, kind of like, you know, what Baron Munchausen or Werewolf or something like that. It's more of a story driven game. There are some mechanics to it, but it's another artsy kind of project, which was just kind of fun. But we also have, Top Secret, of course, which is our bread and butter right now. That's our flagship product. And we just released, so Jonathan, check this out. Came out just yesterday, I think it was. Put it in the store. Rendezvous Oasis. It's a Top Secret mission.
That's cool.
Yeah. And it's, I think it was like, what was it, like 50 pages? I can't remember how many pages it was. But it's a beefy little module. And I did a lot of work on that. So Merle originally wrote it back in the 90s, I think. And I took it and modernized it and rewrote a whole bunch of pieces of it. And, you know, just kind of, brought it up to the 2020, kind of like what people who play games in 2020 would expect from a module, as opposed to, you know, back in the 90s, which, again, not a dig. It's just different. You know, people are different today.
Things change.
Yeah. And then, of course, you can always improve anything. So if somebody else were to take this and work on it and re-release it, they'll improve everything that I did, of course. But, you know, I did some improvements to it, you know, did some really cool, fun stuff with it. It's got this randomizer thing in it where when you go on the adventure, you have to travel through the desert. And before you get to your location, there are random encounters. Now, these aren't just, you know, a band of orcs and you kill them. These are like situations. So it's random situations. And your characters can deal with them or not. Some of them are intermixed with other ones. But the fun thing is that when you play the module, you're only going to encounter three on the way out and three on the way back. But there are 12 of them and they're random. So you can play this module multiple times and it can be a very different module, except for the main part, which I built in enough stuff that you could tweak that. You could tweak that pretty robustly. So you could run this multiple times with the same group of people or run it at a convention multiple times and have a different adventure almost every time.
Sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah. And last year we released The Drop, which was that's a little module. That's like, honestly, that's like an hour or two's worth of adventuring, unless you want to like use that as your starting point and build out something out of it, which you can do. We made suggestions for that. But that's our Top Secret line. And then what else do we have? We have The Hunt, which have you seen The Hunt or played it?
I've seen it played, but I haven't played in it yet.
Okay. The Hunt is a skirmish game. So it's a cross between a board game and a role-playing game. So it's kind of half role-playing game, half board game, kind of like D&D 4E in a lot of ways. But it's another one from the 90s that we actually licensed from this guy, Leo. I have a new version of that I've completely redesigned for the Razer system, which I've been building.
I've never heard of that.
Yes. I'm going to be demoing it at TotalCon this year.
Cool.
I've got two. I'm going to run The Hunt twice, and they both run off of the light. So Razer comes in two flavors, right? It's spelled Razer, R-A-Z-E-R, as in like a person who like tears buildings down, you know, like raise a village. So you're a Razer. I thought that was just kind of cool. And like, that sounds cool. And
it does sound cool.
But then I did it sort of like a double, like it's play on words. So I have Razer Edge, which is just the simple version, and then Razer Blade, which is a very complex version. So it's a very intricate game. The Blade game is going to be games that are like, going to be intricate, like a full blown campaign level role playing game where your characters are completely fleshed out and there's all kinds of stuff, backgrounds and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you can do whatever. Whereas the Edge games are a little more like the skirmish games where they're, you could conceivably run a campaign with it, but I probably wouldn't. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be really simple, like stuff you play at a convention, stuff you play on the weekends with your friend beer and pretzel type role playing. Like, as you get older and you have less time to spend, you know, putting together adventures and, you know, doing campaigns and stuff. Same kind of like Savage Worlds. That's the reason why they built Savage Worlds the way they did. It was supposed to be a game that you could just sit down and play quickly and have fun with. And it wasn't supposed to be homework, you know, or a project. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I also have a Grit and Grimoire, which is the D&D-ish version of The Hunt. So I took The Hunt and turned it into a fantasy thing. So you're going through the dungeon and you literally are just killing monsters, getting treasure, stealing things. Just, you know, it's the hack and slash murder hobo game. And it's really mainly for, like, again, doing it at conventions or just having fun on a weekend, you know, with your pals. Let's say you're going to get together once in a while and play. You could just play this. And it's generic enough that you could literally take any module you have and just almost run it off the cuff with this system.
So you were using your everyday life as inspiration for that, right? Just going through the dungeons, killing monsters.
Yeah. I used my experience, my personal experience of killing monsters and getting treasure. And,
well, I thought so. I mean,
murder hoboing things. But only the mean ones, only the bad ones.
Okay. Well, of course.
And then there's your favorite. Okay. So I'm not going to get into the rest. We got a couple more games in here, but I'm not going to get into them. I brought over Rogue Chess, but let's not even talk about that, because that's an old game and it's really just something that sits in the, at a Game Crafter, and you can order it and I make like 10 cents off of it if you buy it. But there's
Cube still have though.
Right. There's Cube of Death.
I know, I've been waiting for this game.
I know. All right. So here's the deal with that. And uh-huh. That's the reason why I want to spend a little bit of time on this. Cube of Death is one of those ones that requires a cash influx because it's a physical product. We can't release it as a PDF. It doesn't work. Like, it's a card game, right? You have to have cards to play. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of, you have to have a bunch of cards to play it because you have to have all these trivia questions and there's the dungeons that you create with it. And, you know, it's basically like a three or 400 card game. So there's an investment. And if we're going to get any kind of price drop so that we can actually make anything more than 10 cents off a copy off of it for ourselves, we have to have it printed in volume.
Yep.
So we're looking at, we need about $5,000-$7,000 to have a print run done with this.
Woo.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is what it is. That card games aren't cheap, especially a big fat card game like this one is. So again, we need a cash influx for that. To do that, normally we would do a Kickstarter. So we tried to run a Kickstarter and we screwed something up on it, with the shipping, which it was just a misunderstanding. And I was looking at it, I'm like, you know what? We could fund, and I could still, if we just barely fund, I will lose about $3,000 because of the way we set it up. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to overfund by, you know, a couple thousand dollars with that, so I don't have to eat, you know, this entire thing. Because our shipping got mixed in with the production costs and I thought they were going to be separate. I intended for them to be set separate the way we set it up. I thought it was, but then I was like, oh no, it's not, but it was already live and you can't do like a dry run with Kickstarter. It's like,
no, you can't change it or anything.
No. So we were like, crap. So I had to cancel it. I was like, we'll run it again. We'll change some stuff up. We'll figure out what we need to do. And then, you know, and then like, here comes COVID, and then here comes, then came the tariffs on Chinese products, you know, products coming out of China. We didn't know where that was going to go. And I didn't want to like have a product come in that we paid for, and then have a tariff out of nowhere that, you know, got enacted because of the trading war that we were having with China at the time. I guess we still are. I don't even know anymore. But then like say, oh yeah, well it's gonna be another $2,000 to bring that in, and be like, well, there went every cent of my profit. I just worked for nothing. And then now, you know, we have supply chain issues, you know, getting ships, there's ships that are sitting out, you know, in the Pacific Ocean and have been there for months, you know, and that could be your Kickstarter product. And I have some Kickstarter products that are sitting in the ocean right now that
I've ordered.
And we didn't want to do that. You know, we don't want to have excuses. We want to do everything we can to keep finding excuses for people. So this is our plan, is we're going to kind of sit this out a little bit, let this play out somewhat. We may get printing done in Mexico.
Oh, okay.
Because I found a couple print houses in Mexico, but that's going to take some more work because I reach out to them. They haven't gotten back to me, so I got to follow up. But that's neither here nor there. What I want to do right now is concentrate on the products that we got that we can get out that we don't need Kickstarters for, that we can just get out and like get people used to Solarian, you know, because we're, again, we're a new company, even though we're old, but we're, you know, we want to build the trust of the community and make sure that people like, okay, they say they're going to do this, so they're going to do it. And they have good product. So I kind of want to do that before I do Cube of Death, because Cube of Death is just, it's literally just going to be a chunk of money that we got to drop on this. And that chunk of money is going to get dropped, whether it's successful or not, if we kickstart it. So I just want to be careful with that.
Well, I mean, it's a big game. It doesn't seem like it's a big game, but it's a big game.
Yeah.
This, like you said, there's a lot of moving parts with it. It's a lot of fun. I've loved every version of it that I played. I think it's really amazing. But I think you guys are being really smart in making sure that you have a steady release of product so that the company stays in the minds of the consumer and that there's something new that gets you coming back that people enjoy. And it gives you also a chance to kind of try out stuff that maybe you wouldn't be thinking of right away if you're so focused on things like Cube of Death and that type of way of doing business. You can start focusing on what other kind of cool stuff you can make and that you can put out.
And, you know, so Jason is working, I don't think I can announce this product yet, but there's a big product that he's been working on with Merle. And it's going to be very popular, I believe, because it's already, it's within established property that other people love very much. So it's a beloved established property in the gaming world. That's all I can say right now. And we are going to kickstart that one because that's just a print, just a book printing. And we may have that printed locally in the United States. We got a printer that has really good prices. They take a little while to get their stuff together. Like, we wouldn't want to do this if it wasn't a Kickstarter. Like, if we were like, we need these books in a month, we wouldn't use this printer. But, you know, if we say, hey, look, you know, once this Kickstarter ends, you know, we'll have the books in 3 months and then we'll ship them out to everybody, because this person takes a little while, but they do good work. It's good quality work. Mm-hmm. And it's very reasonable. It's just, they're not super fast.
Yeah.
That's the one downside. That's why they're a little cheaper. But, so we'll probably do that. And we project that's going to make a tidy profit. So we're hoping that if that is the case, we may even just fund Cube of Death ourselves. We may just put the money into that and just fund, just not even kickstart it, just fund it ourselves and sell it.
So when do you think you can announce about the Dragonlance game coming out?
It's not Dragonlance.
I didn't think it was, but definitely not Dragonlance. I had to put something in there.
It's not even D&D related.
No, but.
It's very cool. You'll see. When you see it, you'll be like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, but I mean, people want Indiana Jones now. So when can you tell us about when the game will be coming out?
I don't know. I can tell you that Merle Rasmussen is part of it. It is a tangential thing to Top Secret. So it is tied into Top Secret in one way.
Cool. People love James Bond. I'm just saying.
Yeah. But it's
so are we looking at like a summer kind of launch?
I don't want to give a date, but that is a reasonable goal.
Okay.
I'm not like making any
early
promises.
Summer, June, late May.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, that's reasonable. Like at the pace they're going right now.
That's cool.
That could very well be.
Teasers is in February or April.
Probably.
Yeah.
Look, I can't make any promises. For one, I'm not the project manager on it. So I don't totally know what they, how long it's going to take. I don't have 100% visibility on it.
Of course, I wouldn't be doing my job if I tried to see what I can ferret out.
Right. I'm not working on that one. I'm currently working on getting Razor done for our, so we have another system that's all our own. I know James is working on some James is working on some OGL stuff. Mm-hmm. Goodman Game, I think it's Goodman Games.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I think that's who he's working. Hold on.
Well, and he's working on something that looks really interesting to me that you haven't mentioned yet.
Hold on. Let me do this one. DCC RPG. And that's with Goodman. I don't know who that's with. Whoever does DCC. Anyway, so he's. I think he's. His plan is to re-release Tales of the Fallen Empire.
Okay.
And then Mary, his wife, is working on some. She's got. I think she's got 3 5E modules she's working on. So well, hope to see one of those soon. Yeah, hope to see one of those soon. And then I was just talking to Steve Wallet. He expressed an interest in doing some 5E modules. So, you know, we got, while we're not really doing much with 5E, our, you know, like me, James, or Jason, we have other people who are interested in doing that. And we're like, yeah, you could, let's do it. And then we also did some tangential stuff. We did one with a module. It's a top secret module with some students up in Canada. I don't even know how this happened. But there was
magic.
There was somehow somebody got in touch with us, and I'm sure Jason probably knows. I don't even know where they came from, but anyway, it was some professor up in Canada said he had some students and they had an assignment to create a product, and I don't even know if it was a business or a writing class or what it was, but he asked us if they could do a top secret module as their project. And we're like, sure. So, you know, these are students, college students. So we supported them and helped them get through that process. They did all the work. It's their work. So I'm not taking any credit for anything that they did because, you know, they did all the writing and everything. I looked it over and gave pointers, suggested some stuff, and I added some content to it, but it's all theirs. And they did a good job, did a really good job. And it's something that it's on sale now. You can buy it now.
Where would people go to buy it?
There's going to be a link in our store. I'd have to send you a link. I have to look it up.
That's okay.
This time. They are selling it. Crap. I don't know. I'll have to find the link for you.
No, it's awesome that they're doing it and that you guys were collaborating with them and supporting them in that. I think that's an amazing thing.
I thought it was really awesome. I really liked, you know, working with the students doing that. It was kind of rewarding because, you know, it's sort of like a little bit of a giving back because we don't get it. We don't get a penny off that. It's all theirs.
I think the word you're looking for is mentoring.
Yeah. It kind of was mentoring. Yeah.
I think more game companies should do that. If they were wise, they would learn from you.
Yeah. Well, and we also, you know, we're also like taking, I mean, if anybody's listening to this and they have an idea for a game or something they want to do, we are open to doing some development, not just anything. Like it's not just any idea, obviously. But like if they want to do something for Top Secret or mostly Top Secret. That's mostly kind of what we're like, if you want to do something for that, or I mean, I guess if you want to do a D&D module or something, we might be up for, you know, doing that.
Do you have an established process for how that goes or how?
Yeah, they would just contact us. They can send an email to hello@solariangames.com and, you know, pitch your idea. If it fits in with what we're doing, then we'll do it. And, you know, it's minimal work on our part. Like we try not to be involved in it because we don't want to spread ourselves too thin. So it would be you, whoever's going to do this, dude, you do it. So you would have to get it edited and get the artwork and do the writing and all that kind of stuff. We're happy to give feedback and read through it and just make sure that, you know, give you some, again, mentor if you need it.
You guys basically act as a publisher. So to speak.
But we collect like a pittance off of it if we put it in our store.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, it's almost nothing.
It's just like a small affiliate amount or finder's fee or whatever.
Yeah. It's mostly you do the work, it's your money. We're not interested in making, I mean, we only want to recoup whatever it is that we have to put into it. But other than that, we don't want any, honestly, if we don't have to charge you anything, we won't.
That's great. So it's funny that you mentioned that, not because I'm not working on anything, but actually the other night I had this really vivid dream. And in the dream, I created an in-depth of sort skirmishy wargaming kind of thing with scenarios. And I was working with you guys to get it out there, put it out. And I don't know why I had this dream or what it meant, because I'm not doing any of these things. But it was in there, and some part of my brain was like, this is how you would do it if you were doing it. And so it's nice to hear that should someone actually want to create a thing, that they can approach you and see if it works, for there to be some collaboration there.
So, you know, you have the hunt, right?
Yeah.
And I'm doing, James is going to eventually do, Death Race Z, which is sort of like a Death Race 2000 version of the Hunt. So cool. It's the Hunt, but you're in cars racing around and killing, I don't know, people.
That's awesome.
Whatever, zombies. But I want to do like a mecha version of it, and like a small mecha, like a 9-foot mecha,
that would be fun
version of it. And we're keeping them all compatible so that you could actually mix and match them. So you could have like the Hunt and throw a mecha in there. And like one guy's running around a mecha and everybody's trying to kill him. But I think it'd be cool. Maybe I should work with you a little bit and pick your brain for some of the wargaming aspects of that, because while it is a skirmish game, it is kind of a board game. It is kind of a war game in a way, maybe pick your brain for some ideas on that, on some of the stuff that you've seen in the games that you've done that you thought was cool. Some of the ideas.
Yeah, we can see what can work out. I think the idea is great. And you're, again, being very smart, no surprise there, but in making it interchangeable with the other aspects of the games and how they're branching out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all about having fun, man. It's all about having fun. I've had so much fun running the Hunt at conventions, and people have a blast playing it, because it's just gonzo, right? It's this game that is, it's ridiculous, right? Because you don't even have to survive to win the game. Like, your character can die, and you, as a matter of fact, the one year we did it, where I was nuts, we had three teams of five people. It was the whole room, the whole that whole small room that we had, and it was three teams, and they went up against each other, and they all had names for their, they came up with these cool names for their characters, and they had their teams. The one team was the, and they're the ones that won, they were the serial killers. So they were, they were, each one of them was a cereal, like as in a breakfast cereal, but they were the serial killers.
Count Chocula.
Yeah, exactly. And they were just nuts, right? But they had completely gotten it. They got it. They understood what the game was, like, right from the get-go. And they, their characters are doing crazy, like, just, it's crazy stuff, but they were racking up points left and right, and they all died. Every one of them died, and their team still won.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's a crazy game. It's fun like that. And Death Race Z is supposed to be like that. And I'll make the mecha one like that as well. Where it's just gonzo nutty, like, 80s cheese, sci-fi.
It's fun stuff.
Yeah.
What is this Kiss My Grits that I see on Solarian Games website?
Kiss My Grits. Okay. So Kiss My Grits is, it's a game that Jason came up with, and there is a little bit of a backstory, but I don't want to go into that, because we kind of want people to find that out on their own.
Sure.
There is the Kiss This, there is a clue in the name. So there is something in the name of the game that ties into something that is in the world. I'll give anyone a dollar if they come up to me and tell me if they figured out what it is. But it does have to do with us and our history. But it's a diner game. So you have a guest, each player gets a guest check, or gets four guest checks. And the guest checks have these things on them. So like blueberry pancakes or country ham or black coffee or scone. And what you have to do is you have to fill that check out, right? And you get cards in your hand. And you can do like, you'll get special cards like substitution you can play it on somebody else, dropped an order and they have to discard, or you can say, substitution, so that instead of chocolate pie as your pastry, it's you can put down a honey, honey dip donut. It's like, I'm sorry, hon, we don't have chocolate pie, here's a honey dip, right? And you fill out your check. it's goofy, and it's not something we would have done other than this, like I said, we had an inspiration and we decided we had to make this game. And we're like, dude, we're thinking this isn't even going to be something I don't know if we'll, obviously we try and sell it in game stores, but I really think this is something we could sell in like Target or Cracker Barrel or something like that. Mm-hmm. I think this, crazy as it is, as stupid as this game like is on the surface, like, not, it's not stupid. It's a cool game. Don't get me wrong. When I say stupid, I mean like,
it's silly.
It's silly. It's a silly game, and it's not, it's something like kids. It's like, it's a good game for kids, and like, it's a family game, right? It's not something in the vein of anything that we've ever done, or that we'd ever had planned to do. But it's crazy. It could be the game that generates the most money that we've ever generated out of anything. Maybe.
Well, I got to say, just little tidbits of it that I've seen on the website and in social media that Jason has shared, it has me maybe more excited than Cube of Death.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's cool. It's a game you can play with your family. You know, the reason why we're thinking Cracker Barrel is that, you know, it's based around a diner, right? And yeah. Cracker Barrels all have that store up front where they sell stuff.
They do.
And it's something you could buy and then go back and play while you're waiting for your food to come with the family, keep the kids occupied.
Exactly. I could see my kids just being like, oh, what is this? Can we do this? And just wanted to get into it. I mean, my eldest just turned 7 and the youngest is 3, and they both would, just from the tiny bits I know, would have a field day with such a thing.
Right. And it's so easy to play. Like, anyone can pick it up and learn it really quick. So it's, I don't know. I just think it's funny because we're like, how did we wind up making this game? We would have, this is nothing that would ever be on our radar, but somehow it happened. And, it also comes from a little bit, Jason and I share this love of diners, right? Like Greasy Spoon diners.
Yeah.
He and I actually send pictures to each other of our meals in a cheap diner. Like, hey, that's look, awesome. I'm having cream chip beef and scrapple. Right.
Oh,
and
he's like, I'm scrapple.
Yeah, I know. Right. And he's like, he actually did find, he's from around this way. Right. So he moved out west. He actually loves scrapple. So he found a diner in his area on the West Coast that has scrapple.
Oh. And,
anyway. And you know that's one of the things in Kiss My Grits, right? You know that's one of the cards.
It has to be in there.
It has to be, yeah. So at any rate, it's just fun. You know, we both love diners, like love them. And so it fits in, even though it's kind of funny that we would do a game about grits. And you know that was you're not old. I don't know if you're old enough. Do you remember a show called Alice?
Yeah.
All right, do you remember Flo? She'd say, "Kiss My Grits."
Yeah.
That's where the name kind of comes from.
Okay. Okay.
Right. But there's also another tie-in. I'll tell you off air.
Okay. Okay.
but if anyone else can figure it out, that'll be funny.
That would be really funny. So I have to ask you, you have experience as a game designer and you're constantly working on new games and putting out new product. Let's say you're at a convention, for example, that is full of individuals who love to play games and love to get the idea of maybe trying to be a game designer. What are the wonks up to you? What's the one piece of advice you would give to that individual about the tabletop gaming industry and being a game designer?
I would say work for somebody else first. So my biggest piece of advice, and it's my biggest regret in the game industry was trying to start out creating my own thing. Don't do that. And not to discourage anyone from creating their own thing, like your own thing from whole cloth, right? Mm-hmm. Like I made up this game system and it's my own game system. You know, I know a lot of people who have done that. And to me, that's a mistake. I wouldn't say don't ever do it. I'm not trying to discourage people from ever doing it. And I'm not going to say don't do it while you're doing this other work for someone else, but get in the industry, learn how it works. Learn what works and what doesn't, and build a name for yourself, right? That's what you should do. And once you've done that, once you've been in the industry for a couple of years and you're kind of known, and you kind of got a feel for it, and you've practiced on somebody else's schedule and somebody else's management, and you've seen what it takes to get this stuff done, because it takes about 1,000 times longer than anyone ever predicts it's going to take. And it's about 1,000 times much more work than anyone ever thinks it's going to be. You basically get a practice run at it, you know, and it's, if you're working for somebody else, they help mentor you and help you learn the ropes. Cause there's a lot of skills that you don't know you need to make a game that, you know, it seems like, oh, I could do this, right? It's like, maybe you can, but you probably are going to have a lot of huge learning curves, you know, because let's face it, when you get done the game, what are you going to do with it? All right, you finish this game. Now what? I'm gonna put it on Kickstarter, right? Well, where's your fan base on Kickstarter? How are people gonna find out that you have this game out, and how are they gonna know to buy from it? How are they gonna know? Well, because you should have built a community before you went to Kickstarter.
You right? need to.
You need to have a community before you go there. How do you get a community? Well, you have to have product. Well, how do you get product without a community? Right? You work for someone else. You build a name. You build a library of product, and then when you're ready, you branch off on your own. And you don't even have. You can do them both at the same time. You can continue to work for someone else and release your own stuff. But that would be my one big piece of advice. Would
be that's really good advice. Very solid.
And I mean, think about it. That's every job, right? That's everything in the world. Like that just True. Ties into like, you know, just common sense. If you really take a few minutes to think about, you know, nobody goes out and just becomes a plumber. Like, I'm going to go out and be a plumber. No, you learn first. You have to, you know, generally you work for a plumber for a while, right? Learn how to do the plumbing.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're going to start your own business, the businesses that succeed are people that mentor under someone else and learn how a business is run, because running a business is a whole skill set, right? Because mm-hmm. if you're going to go out and you're going to make a game and you want to sell it, well, now you want to be a business because you're going to sell your game. So that makes you a business, right?
Yep.
You could be the best game designer in the world and be a crappy business person and fail miserably with the greatest product ever.
We've seen that happen a lot, actually. With
your business is not sound. Look what happened to Gary, right? Gary Gygax.
I was thinking it. I was going to say, but it's true.
No, it's true. He was a terrible businessman.
Not a good business individual. Yeah.
You know, he was very creative. He got swindled out of his product. And if he had been a more shrewd businessman, that wouldn't have happened to him. And again, I'm not throwing shade on him. You know, it is what it is. You know, that's how it happened.
Well, look at Apple, for example. I mean, you have that teamwork there, and the more people dig into the origins of Apple, the more and more people realize that Steve Jobs couldn't have done a lot of it, but what he was good at was marketing and promotion and the business side. He had a way about it. He was a good sales individual. And you have that teamwork going on.
Look at us. It's me, Jason, and James, right? And we're barely getting this done.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we're doing it, but we're moving at a slow pace. I would love to move at a much faster pace, but there's three of us and we're moving as fast as we can. Yeah. But you've got the business aspect, you've got the creative aspect, you've got who does your media, who does your promotion, who does accounting, who does, you know, we have to hire artists. None of us are artists. So we hire artists. I mean, we're all designers, so we can do the design work, but we're not artists. So yeah, we can design the layout of the book, we can make it look pretty. You do all that kind of stuff. You give me artwork, I can put it in the book and make it look nice. But to generate the original artwork, mm-hmm. while I can do artwork, it's not of the caliber I want in our books.
Yeah.
Right. So you have to be all these things. You have to be 20 people.
Well, and plus, I mean, all of you have normal jobs, so to speak.
Oh yeah.
So you all work, you have your regular jobs, your 9-to-5s as they used to be called. And you're doing this too. It's hard to do anything outside of it.
Oh, hey, you want a second piece of advice? Don't be married and have children. That's a good piece of advice. not throwing shade on people who have kids. I have kids. I'm married and I have kids. I'm telling you, it just makes it harder because you have to divide your time. Mm-hmm. And if you have a full-time job, so you get your full-time job, you go to eight hours a day, let's just say. I mean, it could be more or less, but what just the average 8 hours. You probably travel to and from work, maybe not nowadays, but you know, probably. Mm-hmm. So that's what, another hour, maybe two if you have to commute.
Yeah.
So you're 10 hours deep. So you go to work all day and you come home, you're tired. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to get dinner. Are you making dinner? Is your partner making dinner? You know, I'm the cook in the house, so I make dinner. So I work all day and then I come home and make dinner, right? Then I'm exhausted. So I want to relax. So I relax a little while. So then somewhere around 8 or 9 o'clock, you know, I find a kind of a second wind to sit down and write and do creative stuff. Well, how late do I stay up doing that? Because if I stay up too late, then I got to get up in the morning, go to work. And then I'm exhausted at work. And now I'm really exhausted when I get home. So maybe I don't do any work that night.
Exactly.
So it's you know, budgeting that time. So then you spend time on the weekends. Well, that takes time away from my family. It takes time away from my friends. It takes, you know, I got to fix stuff in my house.
Of course.
It's very, very, you have to be disciplined.
You can do it, but it's not easy.
No. I've told people in the past, if you want to do game, you know, if you decide that you want to do game design, you want to make a role-playing game or whatever, I'm like, I'm going to advise you not to do it. Just don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you walk away from that and you say, I can't help myself, I have to do it, right? Like I'm compelled to do it. Well, that's a step in the right direction. You have to have that, because if you don't have that, you'll quit. You have to tell me, no, screw you, I'm doing it anyway. And if you can do that, then you've still got, you know, some of the what it takes to get it done.
I find, obviously it's different, but I find it's true even of podcasting. For me, there was a clear distinction with what I did with Wargaming Recon before I was married, and then before my first child was born, before my second child was born, and how it is now. And you have to have that passion. It has to be there with you. Say, no, this is important. We're going to find a way to make it work. But also to be okay with what that means. And not just for you to be okay with it, but for your family to be okay with it too.
Your family, your friends, you know, and this isn't just your whatever, your partner and your child or whatever it is that you have, whatever dynamic it is you have at home. But there's also the, you know, you got your parents, mm-hmm. and your the cousin that you're close with who, you know, has a birthday that's, you know, right after yours. And then, you know, your mom's birthday is like 3 weeks later. So, you know, you've got three or four birthday dinners to go to this month, and, you know, they're all going to be on Saturday night or Sunday, or, you know, and that was the weekends you were going to do what? Work on your game. Right. Yeah. But now you can't because you're doing all this family stuff. And then, the back door's got a creak in it that I got to fix. And, I got to take my car down to get the oil changed, you know? And it's like, stuff all adds up.
It does. And something has to give is what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do it all the time. It's not possible. Right. And even if you could, it's not healthy.
So that's why I say, if you start with someone else, helping someone else with their projects, like, I don't know, you get a job with, I don't know, maybe you get a job with Wizards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have money. I don't know. Or whoever, even an independent game designer where you don't really make a whole lot. But what you have is you have multiple people working on this thing. You're not all alone. You know, you'll have one piece of it. And you can hone your craft and do that one thing, right? And get it done and stay on schedule and then learn your craft and stuff. And then, like I said, if you build a following, and then you're able to do something like a Kickstarter where you can generate enough funds where you can pay people to do all those other things that you can't do all those things,
mm-hmm.
Then you'll be successful.
Yeah.
But to try and do all this stuff right out the gate, I think is you're hurting yourself.
It's too much.
I think it's too much. I mean, so I guess there's some people out there who, you know, who are like crazy go-getters and can do it.
Even that, I think no matter what, it's too much. Even if not everyone's going to be willing to accept that it's too much, but it's too much for 99.9999% of the individuals out there. It's too much.
I would also say, you know, you might think that you have friends that will help you, and they may have the intention to do it. But if they haven't created anything, chances are they don't have the creator spirit in them. Creators create.
Yeah. Right?
So if you're a creative type, you will have stuff that you have created no matter what, like from the time you're a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was a kid, when I was in high school, I've been making games since I was 12, and none of them before what, the 90s. Ever saw the light of day other than just my friends,
mm-hmm.
or just me. You know, I would just make a game just to make one, and then never did anything with it, never played it or anything. Just made a game, and it wasn't good, but it was, you know, it was my learning process, and because I wanted to. But I've always had that creative spirit in me. And if you want to get one of your friends or a couple of your friends to help you, really look to the friends who have stuff they've made. It doesn't have to be games. It can be music. Let's maybe they're a musician, but they're interested in games. If they have a whole bunch of music that they've created, it shows that they have that creative drive and that spirit. You know, I won't name names, but I have a friend or two who likes the idea of being creative, but doesn't put the time in, isn't willing to put the time in, fantasizes about the idea of putting the time in, like would like to, like has all the greatest intentions and would love to be someone who does that thing, but yeah, just at the end of the day doesn't. And, you know, that's no fault. It's just, they're just not that type of person. And working with that person, I wound up having to do everything. So I would say, you know, you want to make sure that you partner with folks who are, you know, in the same vein as you. And unfortunately, it's probably not going to be one of your close friends.
That's probably true. I think you also have to look at it as, if they're helping you out, they're basically volunteering.
Yeah.
And so you have to accept that and treat it as such. And also, it's going to sound terrible, but really lower your expectations. There's a difference between where you're paying someone, yeah, and what that means, and the responsibility both from you and the freedom you might feel to ask for things that you wouldn't ask a friend or someone who's volunteering because you don't want to damage anything or have any conflict. Whereas if you're having a contractual kind of thing, it's like, okay, this is how it's going to work. We understand. We both agree. All the parties agree. And that's how it is. And therefore you both have freedom to say, okay, I need whatever. Whereas you might not feel as comfortable doing that with someone who's freely given their time. Or
it also helps. It also helps if everybody has skin in the game.
Yes.
So if they have a vested interest in it as well. So if you're the one putting all the money and time in and you're in control of everything and they're just, you know, quote unquote, helping you, mm-hmm, dude, you're never going to see anything from them. I mean, they may have the best intentions, but you're really not. It's that it's hard enough to do this, but it's really hard when there's no drive, when there's nothing driving you to make you do it. I mean, even me, like even my own stuff, I have a hard time driving myself to do it sometimes. And I have skin in the game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think they have to be vested. So, you know, they have to be helping pay for stuff and helping, you know, having responsibility that falls on them. You know, and of course they share in the profits if that's the case.
Yeah.
Right. And paying people is always great incentive. I mean, you know, because you can always say, well, you don't get it done, you don't get paid.
Exactly.
And then they're going to be like, well, no, I want the money. Well, then you're going to do the work.
In the whole skin in the game thing, I don't see it as a mean thing. It's
no.
I think it's really easy to find a reason to not do something.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
But if you've invested something in there, that makes it harder to say, yeah, okay, I'm not going to. Okay,
like
I want to play
a
game. I want to watch a TV show. I want to go out tonight. It's, I've invested something. I need to do it.
Right. It's like I said, you know, I'm invested. Like in Solarian, right? And mm-hmm, there are times when I have to drive myself to do what I need to do. And I would, you know, there are evenings where I'd rather not do anything, right? I want to watch TV or I want to play a video game or, you know, I don't know. I want to get drunk with my friends. And I do that sometimes because, you know, you got to have balance.
You do.
But you know, there are a lot of times where I'm just like, no, just sit down and start working and it'll come to you. Right. And that's literally true. If I open up a file and I start work, I'm good to go. That's like 90% of my battle is just sitting down, opening the file and starting work. And once I do that, almost always I get shit done.
Getting going can be hard, absolutely hard to do. And I should just remind everyone, of course, that officially we encourage everyone to drink responsibly should you choose to drink all, right, and only when and where legal, of course.
absolutely.
Just because I don't want to get sued.
No, absolutely. Be responsible.
So I have to ask, and I feel that I know the answer, but I have to ask anyway, because maybe you'll surprise me. What would it take for you to host or co-host a podcast?
Oh, again?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. What would it take? All right. So yeah, you know, I did a bunch of them. So for,
and I know you're going through burnout.
10 years, I podcasted every week. I had a podcast, at least one podcast that I was running or co-hosting or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
10 years.
Long time.
Maybe 12. Crap. I can't even remember. 10, 12, something like that. You know, and it was different podcast. MythWits was the last one. That was the last 7 years.
Yeah.
But while I was doing MythWits, I did like two other ones too. I did Cube of Death and I did Game School.
You did.
So I was doing three podcasts a week at one point,
which because you're crazy.
Complete insanity. And the other two needed editing. And matter of fact, Cube of Death needed a lot of editing because I put in music and sound effects. And
you did a lot with it.
Oh my God, it's ridiculous. So what would it take? What would it take? It would take, because I actually had pitched Cube of Death just recently to iHeart. They didn't pick it up. But it was a long shot anyway, because they don't really do game shows. That's okay. That was a real long shot. We knew it was. We were like, yeah, they may or may not. Because we were like, it's not really a game show. It's kind of a story and a game show and a blah, blah, blah. But they did, whatever. But I would have done that one because they would have given us seed money to start. And they would have given us money. I would have had enough money to pay a host, pay a professional host, to pay an editor, and to pay at least one other person to like do like management type stuff, like some of the, you know, the errand running type of things. It's all virtual, but you know, like call this guest, schedule these three guests for this night, you know, that kind of stuff, you know,
important to have.
And then I would have actually also brought in a little bit of money for my time for all the writing and stuff that I would have to do. So that's what it would take, because then I'm actually able to do something that I enjoy and I don't have to draw myself, and I would actually have a few bucks in reserve if I had to pay for something instead of like having it to come out of my pocket or having to like spend, you know, an entire week trying to figure out how to do something. I could just literally just like pay somebody to show me how to do it, or just pay someone to do it. You know,
it's like, nice.
I need a plugin for the website for our, you know, WordPress site. I want to run the show on our WordPress site, but I don't know how to do that. Instead of me spending a week or 2 weeks trying to figure out how to make it work and like banging my head against my desk, I could just like go online and find somebody and pay them. Hey, Joe Blow, put this in my website. Okay, great. That'll be $300. All right, here you go, $300. But that's what it would take. It would take a professional production. Plus, not only that, I don't want to do anything that's sub-professional anymore. You know what I mean? I did all that, and I was at that level when MythWits ended. Our show was polished. It was awesome, but it was just so much work. But I don't want to do anything less than that either.
It's good that you know exactly where your boundaries are and what your requirements are. Not many individuals have that.
Oh, here's another way I would do it. If somebody wanted me to be on-air talent, I could show up and spend an hour being on-air talent for someone.
That's the dream, isn't that?
There you go, right?
Yeah, I want that.
Good luck with that, right?
I want to just be on-air talent.
Everybody wants to be talent.
I remember in the olden days thinking it'd be so cool to have control and do all the things and how amazing that would be. And that wears then very quickly.
It's a passion, man. You got to love it.
You do have to love it.
I'm impressed with the amount of time that you've put into this show. Like, you've been doing this forever. What, 15 years?
Oh, something ridiculous. It's because I'm too stubborn to give up.
Right. But you got a good following. It's a good show.
Or too dumb. I'm not sure which it is. It's one of the two.
I think you're just too stubborn. But yeah, no, you do a good job.
It's not me. It's everyone else around me. But this is a good team.
You're the heart of it, though.
I'm something.
Without you, it doesn't happen.
I enjoy being here and seeing what we can do to help others and maybe put a smile on someone's face.
Yeah.
Speaking of putting smiles on people's faces, how can listeners keep up to date with all the things that Solarian is doing? How can Solarian put smiles on their faces?
Okay. So, you know, obviously we have Solarian Games. It's Solarian games.com.
Cool.
That's our official website, and that's where all of our products and stuff are. We also have store.solariangames.com, but you can get there from Solarian Games, so don't even worry about that. Just go to solariangames.com. And you can also find us on Facebook. That's if you want to have the most live, up-to-date, because that's like we treat that as sort of like our news and our media and all that kind of stuff. So Facebook and Instagram, you can find us under Solarian in both places, Solarian Games in both places. And Twitter. We're on Twitter, too, is Solarian. I think Solarian Games on Twitter as well. I don't do Twitter, so I don't. I'm sorry. I think that's Solarian Games on Twitter. If you type that in, you'll find it. But that's where we do all of our, like, kind of our announcements and stuff. But if you go to our website, you'll see all of our current stuff. Like our latest book is you know, Rendezvous Oasis, and it's right on our store.
And so how do I get a signed copy of Rendezvous Oasis?
You could come to TotalCon.
I wish.
Actually, you know, I have to talk to Jason about that. I'm not sure. I think those are getting shipped directly to the warehouse, and then directly to the customer from the warehouse. So I don't know that we ever even see them. But we're happy to sign up if we see you somewhere. I know Gary Con is something we go to sometimes. One of us, at least. Hold on one second. I know, Gary Con is something that either James, Jason, or me will go to at some point. Gen Con is something that one of us goes to, probably. It's been a little, I say probably, unless, like, it's been a little crazy the last year or two. So,
well, yeah,
I don't even know what the hell anything looks like anymore. We are definitely going to TotalCon, so I'll be there. I'm going to Balticon, so I'll be there and probably have a couple.
That's cool.
We could probably make it happen. I don't know if you really, really wanted one.
Word on the street is they begin shipping February 21st of 2022 for anyone who wants to buy a copy.
Yep. And here's the thing. When you buy this first run, you get I think it's $20. You get the PDF with it.
That's awesome.
So you get the book, you know, the physical book and the PDF, for the same price. That's the bundle. And if you buy it now, so if you buy a copy of it right now, you'll get the PDF right away. Like, so you can download the PDF. You can download the PDF right now.
Oh, okay.
But once this, I don't know when Jason's going to end this, because this is sort of like he's running the promotion on this. Mm-hmm. But once the promotion's done on this, then it's they're sold separately.
Yeah, so
you don't get the PDF with the book. It's like a promotional period. Like, we want you to buy it now.
No, it makes sense.
Again, we're trying to generate revenue so we can make more cool stuff.
Get the buzz going all at once. I think it would look really good on my shelf next to my limited edition hardback Top Secret New World Order book and my Top Secret New World Order box set. And I believe I have my administrator screen and character sheet also all next to each other. And yet, I'm really excited by all this, but I've never played it. I've flipped through the hardcover book, but I haven't opened the box set yet, because I'm like, I don't want to open it until I'm actually going to start playing. But the whole thing just kind of excites me. The idea
you might, you know, if you ever show up somewhere where I'm going to be, you could have somebody, you know. I'm just ribbing you, because I know you're not going this year.
I'm
giving you a hard time.
I know you are.
I'm giving you a hard time.
I really want to go. I'm going to miss you, man. So I'll be in attendance that way. It's not the same, but.
There's one more thing that I do, and I'll do this real quick. You know, I do acting, right? So I've been doing acting with an independent game studio, or not game studio. I'm sorry. Independent film studio called Nerd Rage Productions. So Steve Wallet runs that. He's one of my best friends, grew up with him. He decided he wanted to make movies. So we're going to be showing this at TotalCon, our first feature length film. I think it's like 1 hour 40 minutes.
Wow.
I think. But it's got like Bai Ling in it, who was, she was in The Crow. She was in Crank. She was in a movie with Richard Gere, which I can't remember which one it was. And then Vernon Wells, who was in Road Warrior. He was the guy with the big mohawk.
Yeah.
But he was also in Commando. He was the bad guy. He's been in a bunch of stuff. He was in Weird Science. He was the guy with the mohawk in Weird Science.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah. So those two are in it. I'm in it. I have a starring role in it. And then of course, you know, I'm in a bunch of the small indie films, the little 15-minute jobs that we do, which is fun. That's a lot of fun too.
So how can people keep up to date with all the things that you're doing, your acting and all the other
stuff? Oh yeah. Yeah. You can go to blixbryant.com.
Ooh, look at you.
blixbryant.com. And that's my actor page. That's my professional page. Actor, writing, all that stuff.
It is really snazzy looking.
Yeah, you like that?
Why would I want to meld with you?
I went real esoteric on the writing on this. Melding, I forget. I think melding is, was that the newsletter or was that just going into the website? I can't remember.
I don't know. You tell me. It's your website.
I don't know, man. I haven't looked at it in a while. I did it in... It's like I do everything. I only have so much time for things. So like I do stuff really fast. Oh yeah. That's the melding is you get on my mailing list.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Cause we're going to meld minds. I don't know if you noticed when you go to that, it says, when you fill out the information, it says punch it, you know, like punch it chewy.
That's awesome.
Instead of submit. But yeah, I did a lot of kind of esoteric-y kind of, writing in that because I was just trying to like I don't know be weird I don't know because you know I also write I too much dude I got too many freaking hobbies I gotta stop
you gotta refocus narrow your focus
well I've been focusing on the game design stuff that's that and I do the acting stuff with Steve but we you know there's Steve does most of the work on that I'm kind of talent I show up I help him do editing on videos and stuff but
you do a good job on that too
thank you I won an award for it.
I know you did. I was trying to lead you that way.
Yeah, one award for best editor for Let's Play. So that was.
See, round of applause, everyone!
Hey, thank you. Woo-hoo. I did the soundtrack and everything for that. It was pretty cool.
Award-winning Peter Bryant has a nice ring to it.
I like it.
You should like it. You worked hard to get it.
I did. My poor wife. Actually, that might be good. That might be a good thing, actually. Maybe it helps our marriage.
Well, they say absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Yeah, well.
So, and there's such a thing as too much togetherness.
Yeah, I think so. When I retire, I don't know what I'm going to do.
You'll have to find a hobby.
No, I have tons of them. No. That was actually sarcasm.
No, I know.
What will I do? I don't know. One of the 1,000 hobbies I have. Maybe I'll do one of them. And
sleep all day.
Maybe I'll do one of them well. I don't
know. Oh, you're so funny. That's all the things I have on my list.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, it's been fun, Jonathan. It's been awesome hanging out with you. I miss you, man. We got to hang out. God damn it. Really wish you were coming to it. I'm not giving you a hard time. I understand.
I know.
It's cool.
I want to
just let you know I miss you.
I need to see you and I want to give you a gigantic hug. I'm in a big hugging phase right now.
Oh boy. Okay. Well,
yeah.
I'm fully vaccinated, so I'm ready. Let's hug.
Hug all the individuals. Come here. Let's hug it.
I'm even boosted. I'm ready. Let's hug. You can breathe on me. I'm fine.
Well, I've had a great time having you here, and I'm sure the listeners have enjoyed it too. I just want to let everyone know, in case they've forgotten, that you can keep up to date with all the things we're doing here at Wargaming Recon. We are on all the things as Wargaming Recon. So you can open up your top secret character mission briefings and in there in small print, you'll see the latest from us here at Wargaming Recon. Not really, but maybe. So you can't miss us. We're everywhere. Everywhere that you look, you close your eyes, we're in your dreams. That would actually be really creepy. We don't do that. But wherever you can find us.
Like Facebook. Santa Claus, I'm watching you.
You know, like you don't think about it as a kid, but when you're growing up, you're thinking like he sees you when you're sleeping.
Dude, it's my daughter. So like the last year that she believed in Santa Claus, she started getting like weirded out by him. She was just like, you know, I think Santa Claus is a little weird. He's always watching us. Like, I love you. It's
so awesome. So my youngest is 3 and leading up to Christmas, she couldn't sleep. And we were wondering what was going on. So she would say, is Santa going to come in my room? No, Santa's not going to come in. He can't come in. I don't want him in my room. So she really freaked out that he's going to come in her room and like be there while she's sleeping.
Awesome.
No, he's not going to come in your room. Are you sure? Oh, I'm positive. He's not going to come in your room. You don't have to worry. He'll leave the presents under the tree.
He's not going to come in. It's going to be the Krampus.
You'll be good. Okay. But what if he comes in my room? And I'm like, oh, no, she's getting my anxiety.
Oh, like, no. Oh, no. What if
he comes in my room? Oh, he will not come. I promise you, honey. Santa won't come in your room. You're safe. Okay.
But my daughter finally gave up the ghost. No more Santa.
Oh.
It was kind of sad.
That is sad.
Whatever. It is what it is.
She's not big though.
It's awesome. She figured it out for herself. And I was like, yep, you got it. You figured it out. I'm not going to try. It is what it is. You're a smart girl. You got it.
Yeah. It's what happens to individuals out there. It definitely does. So thank you everyone for being with us on this episode of Wargaming Recon. And we have more cool episodes coming up, more guests coming as we continue on in this 2022 season. And don't forget, you can keep up to date with Peter Bryant and all things Solarian by checking out the various websites. We'll have links in the show notes and on all the things. Peter, thank you again for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
It's been too long. And so everyone, it's been a little while. We're a little rusty, but I know if I don't do it, I will get messages from people wondering why. So here goes. No matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how much time you're thinking, what could be this game that Solarian's coming out with that they can't announce what it is yet? You know that you have to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Thank you to everyone who backed our 2021 podcast season on Kickstarter. In particular, we'd like to thank 3DDZYN at 3ddesign.com, Nate Taylor of Dwarven Forge, and Things from the Basement, where you can get highly detailed laser cut terrain kits for 28, 20, and 15 millimeter figures and other exciting products. We couldn't have been successful without the help of all of you. Thank you so much for your support and being part of our community. We hope you are enjoying the 2021 season.